Welcome everyone tonight to the services. I thought I would say that. I always say it's good to see everybody tonight and or this morning or whatever day or time it is. And I don't do that consciously. Usually I do it just because I look at y'all and that's the first thing I can think of. But I also realize that when you say the same thing over and over that it elicits a certain response. I call it the preacher's reflex. It's a yawn. And so after 25 years, though, you're kind of stuck with it. So I thought I'd give you a new one tonight. We talked about milestones this morning and how important they are and the good milestones, how much we look forward to them. And the ones that are not quite as good, how we kind of look back on them and wish maybe we'd have been a little more attentive or taken care of our opportunities a little bit better. Then we made that transition to the spiritual and the milestones we have with that. And we talked about the new creation and how important that is. And tonight I wanted to look at the other side of the milestone, those that when it comes to the spiritual things in life that we really wished that we had done a little bit different. And I do that not to beat us up or anything like that, but to make a point that God has for us that I believe demonstrates His love and His mercy for us, maybe in as beautiful a way as possible, and that is that regardless of how we've handled the past, it's what we do from here forward that's going to determine whether you're in heaven or not. God wants you to be in heaven. If it was just up to God, it would already be taken care of. It would just be, it'd be grace only, and maybe if you want to throw in the sacrifice of Christ, and I don't mean that in a flippant way, but I mean for those who want it all to be done for them, to have a catered salvation, and just everything done, then you can do that if you want to think that, but there will come a point where there will be a day of reckoning where we'll find out something different. And so the important thing for us to do now is to take care of what we need to take care of now. And if we'll do that, we'll enjoy all those milestones again. I was talking to, I think it was Julie afterward, and she said, whenever you talk about that, it makes me sad. And I thought I talked about that last in 2015. That was what I had in my notes. Actually, it's 2011, so it must have been earlier or more recently than that. But I love this theme because I really like what God has done for us, and I like looking back on the things that we've been able to enjoy. I just think that while we certainly, each one of us, have had our own difficulties in life, our own tragedies to deal with, we've had a good life. You have to admit, if you're sitting here in a saved condition right now, you have had a wonderful life. And it only gets better from this. And as far as the milestones, one of the things that I was thinking about, as far as we do miss the opportunities with our kids sometimes, if we're married and have kids, but you get them with your grandkids, you get to start over again, and it's the same thing with us. We paid attention to every milestone with that first child. Oh, they said their first word. What was it? You know, it was Goggy, I believe, was one of what my sisters knew. You know, and well, what does that mean? Well, of course, Dad said it meant Daddy, and Mom said it meant Mommy, but the dog knew who it was. And it's just one of those things that by the time the second or the third one comes along, they're not quite as noteworthy anymore. And it's just like, oh yeah, they've been speaking French for 3 years. I'd forgotten to say anything about it. But the first one is just notable. And the first steps, they're not the same thing with grandkids. You know, you get all these things, except for now, instead of getting them in a letter telling you a week or two after it happened, you get something that comes on your wife's phone and it beeps, and then she comes and she shows you, and you get to see your grandchild doing all these marvelous things that's never been done in the history of man, except for with every human being that's ever lived. And those are milestones. The milestone that we really want to focus on tonight is what happens with our soul. What happens on that day? Whether that day for you is the day of your death, or whether that day for you is the second coming. What happens then? Because we're moving towards that day at a rapid speed. I went from 0 to 60 like a sports car, I'll tell you. I never thought of myself as fast, but I think I did that in 3.8 seconds or something like that. Because I look back, and it's just like, what happened to life? And that's one of the things I love about being a Christian. I can see why those who are not Christians stayed mad and depressed all the time, because they just see their life slipping away. But a Christian sees their eternity drawing nearer and nearer. The reason that we were created, drawing nearer and nearer, your eternity, whatever God has planned for you. And this life is much more like the 9 months of pregnancy, when it, I would suspect in God's eyes, the waiting to see how you're going to turn out, than it is the sum total of our existence, like so many think. We're going to start in Matthew 24 and verse 44. Talking about that final time. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It'll be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he'll put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and in an hour he is not aware of. He'll cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's like those milestones we were talking about earlier, you know, that the last time you hold your child. And it's not, for most of us, maybe for you it was. Maybe you are the one person in the history of the world that realized, this is the last time I'm going to have enough strength to pick up this child. But most of us, that's not the way it is. For most of us, it's that child comes up and goes, and we say, you're too big to, you know, to be picked up, walk yourself. And then we look back on over the years and think, man, I wish I'd picked him up and given him a hug or something. Jesus says the master will come on a day he does not expect, at an hour he's not aware of, and he'll cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We hear, for lack of a better phrase, spiritual fantasizers. They call themselves preachers and pastors and priests, or some other religious title that they've given to themselves, or men have hung on them. And they have this idea that God is so loving that he will never do anything that is harsh or hard or punitive. But it was Jesus who says he'll cut him to pieces. Who is right? And God doesn't want to do that. But he's going to do that for his enemies, for those who have decided that in their life, rather than to be a servant or to take all the chances that God gave to him and become a good servant at some point, they decided to be an enemy of the cross. And an enemy will always be cut to pieces and assigned a place with the hypocrites, unless there's a repentance. And so when we talk about these things, we have to understand God is serious about this. He wants us to be there, but if we don't want to be there, the punishment is severe. Isaiah chapter 30, now in verse 12. Isaiah is an interesting book. It covers four kings. When you read it, it starts off with Uzziah or Ahaziah. I'm not sure exactly how yours puts it. And it ends with Hezekiah. And then it's got Jotham and Ahaz as well. But probably we're getting now closer to the end of that time, probably sometime during Hezekiah's time. And God has been warning them and telling them, this is what's going to happen if you don't change. And so chapter 30, he kind of starts just putting everything together. Let me start back in verse 1, and he says, "Ah, stubborn children, declares the Lord, who carry out a plan, but not mine, and who make an alliance, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin." who set out to go down to Egypt without asking for my direction, to take refuge in the protection of Pharaoh, to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the protection of Pharaoh turn to your shame, and the shelter of the shadow of Egypt to your humiliation. We try to be good citizens. I hope you try to be a good citizen, but understand, we serve a government that permits the abortion of babies. Our government is no better than Pharaoh when it comes to that. There's a wickedness that is almost indescribable. As a matter of fact, if I were to describe what we do in that particular process, not to mention all the rest, it would just be utterly distasteful to think about what we do. Sometimes we put our trust in the very people who keep sinful activities going, and we think there's a reward for that. And we will even allow them to be the ones that tell us what to do when it comes to spiritual things. And we've got to be careful on that, because I think they're getting bolder and bolder in what they're doing. And so here they got, these people are going back to Egypt, or they want to go back to Egypt under the protection of Pharaoh. The one whom from a long line of people who had had them enslaved hundreds of years ago. And then in verse 8, he picks up and he says this: "Now go write it before them on a tablet and inscribe it in a book, that it may be for the time to come as a witness forever. For they are rebellious people, lying children, children unwilling to hear the instruction of the Lord." Can you imagine becoming so wicked that you are unwilling to hear the instruction of the Lord? When we talked about those different milestones that we hit, for those who are lost, for those who will become lost, there will be a time, a last time for them, where they refuse to hear the Lord. That last time will be the last time they really had a chance, that they were really listening and thinking, okay, this is from God, I need to do that. And then after that milestone passes, they're just lost, unless there is a change. And God's talking about that. They're rebellious people, lying children, unwilling to hear the instruction of the Lord, who say to the seers, "Don't see," to the prophets, "Don't prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy illusions." That's the popular ones, isn't it? The ones that say, "Look, I'm okay, you're okay, we're all going to the same place, just by different paths. Nobody has anything on straight. God's grace will just cover whatever you have." Without an understanding that there are requirements that God has set into place. You drop down to verse 12. "Therefore," this is what the Holy One of Israel says, "because you rejected this message, relied on oppression, and depended on deceit, the sin will become for you like a high wall, cracked and bulging, that collapses suddenly in an instant." There are times in our life where everything just seems to be fine. There's no problems. Matter of fact, things may seem to be going good. Being an intellectual, I enjoy intellectual pursuits, and one of my favorite intellectual pursuits is watching Leave It to Beaver. And my favorite Leave It to Beaver episode is one where he and his brother Wally and his dad have built a go-kart out of a lawnmower engine and a frame. And the dad said they have a lot of fun with it, and the dad says, "Don't you use this without me present." And of course, Beaver very sincerely says, "I won't do it." And then his best friend, Larry Mondello, comes over. And the next thing you know, they're driving down the street in the go-kart by themselves. And the two of them have the biggest smiles on their face you could imagine. Life is at the apex, the top. Everything is great. And then the siren comes. And you see the... I think this is the way the second coming is going to be for most people. Because Jesus said, "Many enter the wide path that leads to destruction, but only a few enter the narrow path that leads to life." For most people, I think they are going to be thinking everything is okay, and then there's going to be a sudden collapse, like this bulging wall seems like it's holding fine, and then just all of a sudden, it's gone. Jesus talked about that. Luke chapter 12 and verse 16. He told them this parable, the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. There I'll store all of my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. It's this idea that you're just at the top of the world. You've in our country, you'd say they've achieved the American dream. They've got so much stored up for themselves that they can take it easy for the rest of their lives. And that's what they think they'll do. They'll retire to luxury. And many people do, and they think that they have achieved success. Not realizing for a moment that when we stop serving God and we look at all the blessings that God has given to us and we say, mine, 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 and we say, I did it, I did it, I did it, and you can't have any of this, and I'm just going to take it easy. I'm retiring from God. And that's what the rich man did. He thought that somehow, even though he was made of dust, he had done all this. And in an instant, there was a dawning of recognition that cannot be ignored if we're wise. We cannot live for the physical and think that anything but disaster can come from it. You can enjoy the physical. God has given wealth to all sorts of people through the years. He's given beauty to all sorts of people through the years. You just look at all the blessings that we have, all the varieties and flavors and colors and landscapes and everything that He's given to us to enjoy. There's nothing wrong with enjoying and appreciating God's blessings. But when we make His blessings the subject or the focus of our being, we miss the point. If He gives us things to enjoy while we serve Him, then enjoy it to the fullest while you serve Him. Remember to have a smile on your face. That will attract people to Christianity. That's a good thing. But if we get to thinking that end is why we're here, just getting a bunch of stuff stacked up, there's going to be a collapse, like a high wall cracked and bulging that's going to collapse in an instant. And just like everything seems to be going great, all of a sudden it'll be the worst time in the world. In Luke chapter 13 and verse 6, Jesus told this parable. And I like this parable because I think we all struggle with this particular subject. And it's the idea of continually getting caught back up in the world and not producing fruit as we should. I have trouble with that, and I'm sure that from time to time each one of y'all have. Maybe, hopefully not now, but maybe at some point in your life. Perspective's difficult, but it's required. He told them this parable, Luke 13, verse 6. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he went to look for fruit on it, but did not find any. So he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, for 3 years now, I've been coming to look for fruit on this fig tree and haven't found any. Cut it down. Why should it use up the soil? Well, I look at that and I think that gives you perspective. God is looking at us and wondering, what are you doing using my air and my water and my food for yourself and not using some of it in my service? And I think that's exactly what the point of this parable is. There's a fig tree. It's not producing fruit. It's just using up the soil. That's a pretty condemning statement when you think about it. Because what is soil? It's dirt. And if you're misusing dirt and you're not worthy of using the dirt for any longer in God's eyes, that shows how serious it is for us to take serious the things He wants us to take serious now. And so here is the one who intervenes. Sir, verse 8, leave it alone for one more year, and I'll dig around it and fertilize it. If it bears fruit next year, fine. If not, then cut it down. I cannot tell you how many times in my life I've thought, I need to get busy right now. I'm in my fourth year. I better start producing fruit. And it's a good thing to come back to. Not from a depressing standpoint. Not from a, I'm a failure. I may be a failure. But from the standpoint of, I don't have to be that way. I can be highly successful and achieve the highest goal known to mankind. I can be in a covenant position with the Lord, and He'll save me if I am in that position. There's nothing better in life. And yet, this is the struggle that we have. And I think God intended that, don't you? Don't you know that when He put Adam and Eve in the garden, that there had to be a test? If there was no test, there would be no choice as far as whether to serve God or not. And yet, here we are in this world surrounded by forbidden fruits, and that's the test. We might hate the fact that there's forbidden fruits all around us, but the point is, we just have to come to the realization that we can no longer partake of those. We need to live for God. And we need to be producing fruit. And when we talk about producing fruit, then you stick the faces on them. We are talking about saving souls. We're talking about your parents and your children and your friends and people that maybe you haven't even met yet, but maybe you have been able to help in some way by contributing to some work somewhere. This is what we're really here for, is to help as many people get to heaven as possible. We realize it's God who saves them, not us. But we are the instruments with which He uses to spread the gospel. Will we do that? Will we bear the fruit? Or will we bear the consequences? 2 Peter chapter 3. In verse 3, he says this. First of all, you must understand that in the last days scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own evil desires. I think about this with the atheist crowd. They call themselves scientists, but they're not scientists. A real scientist looks at the facts and draws a reasonable conclusion based on the facts. A real scientist does not look at the facts and come up with something fanciful. And that's what we have now. Oh, there's a person there. Well, what does that mean? Well, science obviously means that since there's a person here now, that 3 billion years ago, gases exploded. And those gases turned into everything from the world to water to organisms that came up and creeped out of it and turned into everything from maggots to men and from trees to weeds. And people believe that and they call it science. God is the science, the scientist. He invented science. He created science. And when we go outside of that, it's just ridiculous. And that's what he says. In the last day, scoffers will come. You'll have people who are talking like they know what they're talking about, who are there. That's all they are, is scoffers. They'll say, verse 4, where is His coming He promised? Ever since our fathers died, everything goes on as it has since the beginning of creation. And then now in verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire. The earth and everything in it will be laid bare. It'll happen before we know it. We think everything is just always like it always has been. I think that's why so many people are looking at what's going on right now and they're thinking everything is just going to work out and everything's going to be normal and after this and there will be no changes and, well, good luck with that. But if you want to believe that, that's okay. It's just physical. You believe what you want on that. It's just physical. But how you react to it spiritually will determine not only your judgment, but it could also determine the judgment of many other people. And if all we do is we look at things, and my life's always been this way, it's always been physical, and that's all I'm going to look at, there's going to come a point where it's not that way anymore. And verse 10 explains that. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. And then you drop down, or now look at verse 11. After he talks about the destruction of the world, he says, since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? That's a $64,000 question, isn't it? What kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives. as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. Are you looking forward to the second coming? If you're not, there's a slight chance that maybe you're not taking things seriously as you should and you realize it. We ought to be looking forward to that. It's only going to be better. You may have a really good life now, and I realize there are people we want to help yet. And we hope that that second coming waits a little bit so that we can help as many people as possible. But we also need to be looking forward to the day of God. That day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat. But in keeping with His promise, we're looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. I've been, I guess, on hundreds of trips through the years, and there's nothing like taking a trip home. And when you get home and you get to see your family and your loved ones, there's just nothing like seeing their faces when you get there. Arriving at home is it makes the whole trip worth it. We're going home to be with God. This is the reason that we're here. This is the final milestone that we need to achieve here on earth. And of course, we can only achieve it by God's grace. We know that. And by the sacrifice of Christ, we know that. But we have our part to do. And if we'll do it, we'll hit that final milestone. And then our existence is really going to begin or end, depending on what condition you are before God. What condition are you before God right now? The invitation's open. If you're ready to respond to the gospel's call, we would encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.